A lot of people leave the stage to go pee. Makes sense.
I do.
Everybody, you're Sorkin in it. It's Studio 60. Please take just a minute. It's about a show, kind of like SNL, but it only lasted one season. Oh well, we're Sorkin in it.
That music means one thing and one thing only. It is time for Sorkin in it. And who better to do that with than your pal and mine, Lex Friedman?
No one better to Sork with, in my opinion, than Brian Warren.
Oh, thanks, Lex.
My pleasure.
How are you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Great. Great. We're pretending that we haven't been talking for 5 minutes already.
Well, I just noticed, we do this on Zoom where we can see each other. I just noticed I had something on my lip the entire time we've been talking, and Brian was too kind to say anything. But it's gone now, so nobody worry.
I was looking into your eyes, not your lips.
I appreciate that.
Well, here we are. This is episode 5 of Studio 60, the long lead story. And Lex, do you remember anything about what happened in this one?
I do. I'm not sure if I remember how the title applies, but that's fine. So in this episode, we've got, Matt, as always, panicking about the upcoming episode. We've got Martha, the reporter played by Christine Lottie, who's doing her thing. We've got Jordan trying to woo one creator and trying to reject another. Matt and Harriet, nay Hannah, working out their stuff a little bit more. And a very small glimpse of Lauren Graham. That's the crux of it. I took so many notes this episode. What did you think? What was your take on this one?
The long lead story is specifically about the Vanity Fair story. I even think somebody early on in the episode says something like, she's doing a long lead for a Vanity Fair cover or something. So that must just be a thing. I don't know enough about magazine publishing to say, but I do find it interesting that that's what they spent the whole, they spent an entire episode title on it.
Yeah.
I feel like this is a little on the weaker side of all the episodes, but I still enjoyed it. And there were still some fun moments. I especially like the Nick Cage sketch that we'll get to later. But I think this was an okay. This felt like a bit of an in-betweener episode that's not a ton of like major things are in motion. And maybe I just get a little bit tired of someone writing articles and that being the whole topic of this episode.
A long lead story is one that, you know, is going to take 4 or 5 months to put together as opposed to a short lead story that you do in a hurry. I think like you, I felt like this one was a little bit filler, but a filler Studio 60 episode, still pretty good. Like I didn't, I enjoyed the episode. It's just nothing to write home about. Certainly nothing to record a podcast episode about, yet here we are doing it anyway. And I, like you, you know, it's some of the reporter angle feels a little bit trite and well covered by Sorkin and others already, but I did enjoy Martha's endless sassing of Matt in that opening scene. Like he's got writer block and she's like, isn't that the worst? Like we can bond because we're both writers. And I was realizing that she a little bit gets to be the Donatella Moss, because she's like, those little numbers that you read on the index cards, what are those? And she gets to be impressive. And then when Matt calls out that she's being impressive, she's like, well, I'm really just doing addition and subtracting.
She was very impressive, though, how quickly she 100%. Figured those things
she
out.
She was a classic Sorkin character in that moment. And then you have, she's explaining why she wants to do this story. And she's like, this show is important. I think that what you guys do here is important. And of course, because it's Aaron Sorkin, you then get Tom Jeter in a giant lobster costume. And I really enjoyed the tiny bit of business that Matt gets to do right there. Because he's like, yeah, I approve. And then, hang on, it's supposed to be a lobster costume, right? that's very funny. And I thought of you because there was classic grammar jokes in this conversation, and you always appreciate a good Sorkin grammar joke, in my experience.
Oh, right. Yeah, yeah. You know me better than my parents. And she said, I don't even know your parents. But she points it out. She says, oh, it's just a dangly modifier joke. I can't help myself. And I'm like, you can't, and neither can Aaron Sorkin, and that's fine.
That's right. And then we go over to Danny and Jordan, and Jordan, first she's pushing Danny to know what meeting he was at, and he's like, well, it's anonymous, and then she's like, oh, that meeting. And Jordan wants help wooing somebody, and Danny's like, nah, that person should do their show at HBO. Okay, We knew that would have more storyline later. But again, that it really feels like, especially Danny, is underfed this episode and mostly given like plot moving storylines versus, you know, he's exposition man today. Mm-hmm. Then we're at rehearsal, this was a camera rehearsal, a blocking and camera rehearsal, which I thought was very cool to see. And I thought for sure they would acknowledge, boy, this Nancy Grace sketch is not funny. And my notes are like, this is not funny. I hope they know it's not funny. I hope there's conversation about the fact that it's not funny. And instead, that's the one that they're supposed to say is funny.
Yeah.
I like seeing all the logistics, Brian. I like seeing how they have to think about what the sets are, where they will be, and which camera can show what. But then they thought it was funny. They even cut to Cal so we can see him laughing so we know how funny it is because he's laughing. Mm-hmm. But I was not enjoying that Nancy Grace sketch. That was not funny to me.
Yeah, it was a little, felt a little worn out. Like, but I totally agree the same thing about the mechanics of what's going on in the entire set and the way that they're like, oh, we got to move this entire set from one corner to another corner because we're going to need that tunnel later. And I don't know, I kind of just eat that up. And even in the background, you see like the whole Nicolas Cage show set is right there too. That felt great. And the fact that all these people were still executing the entire sketch at the same time that they're moving all this stuff around just kind of helps cement these people as pros. And I like that too. Yeah, they were good.
I appreciate everything you're saying. And I'll even say, I think even non-pros do that. Like I've been in a lot of community theater stuff and like there's these moments where you guys keep working the scene, but we're going to be changing all the lights or now the orchestra is going to start doing this. And like, you just keep going. And I appreciated that they kept going. I also appreciated they didn't get annoyed when it stopped. That's to me what spoke to the professionalism when he's like, okay, I have enough. And I'm like, great. Because so many actors are like, well, no, can we just run the rest? Can we finish the scene? Mm-hmm. Can we do that? Like, no, that's not what this is for.
They know their lines. They're fine.
Yeah, 100%. No, they don't know their lines, but they know where the cue cards are.
Yeah, they know what they do.
And now Martha wants to talk to Harriet. Mm-hmm. And she leads with how funny Nancy Grace was, and I wrote, no, it's not. And then she asks Harriet, what would your parents call me? And Harriet's description was, the devil's whore from Washington. Are we supposed to believe that Harriet's parents know who Christine Lottie's character Martha is? I don't know. Mm-hmm. And then she wants to get into the church religion conversation. And I wasn't sure how I felt about some of this dialogue. And it goes on for a long time. This is maybe the longest scene in the episode. I enjoyed that we see Tom still in his lobster costume, apparently trying to sleep. He would never sleep in that costume, but I still enjoyed it.
No.
Martha asks Harriet, like, you know, do you object to sketches that joke about premarital sex, or do you object to premarital sex, I think? And she's like, I don't object to premarital sex. I have premarital sex. Good to know. And of course, Harriet has a drunk father because Aaron Sorkin wrote this show.
Yep.
Her jokes diffuse tension. I believe that. Like that feels to me like a reasonable, funny person origin story. And she became a Christian and a comedian at the same time. She went to Rutgers, so yay, New Jersey. She did the Groundlings, so yay, Groundlings. I did that too. And then she was discovered, we now learn, by Danny Tripp. It was Danny who said, hey, you should be on Studio 60. How'd you feel about that whole
scene?
And that's
fine.
Only half the scene. That's maybe even only a third of the scene.
It was fine backstory. I struggle because Martha's supposed to get full access. A lot of the show is about people trying to be guarded around her and not tell her things. And so it feels like Harriet is doing something wrong by giving her backstory and telling her things. They're both doing their jobs here. And there's a little bit of that extra tension of, I want to see Martha as the enemy, but she's not the enemy. She was invited in. Everything's supposed to be fine. It's okay for Harriet to tell her these things. I don't know how much of that we need. Maybe it was supposed to be more in service for us than for the story. And later we get to this, but Martha is actually turning out to write more of a story about Matt and Harriet than anything else, and like how these people can survive together on stage or something. Okay, like I don't know.
Yeah,
I was ready for the next silly joke, and I did like the way that it ends, where it was like, oh, we have to stop talking because Sting's on stage playing a lute. So
right.
we're gonna stop the interview now.
So it's
who can resist Sting?
There's a lot of stuff that happens in that Sting moment too, where Harriet says it's a beautiful instrument, and then Martha says Sting or the lute. So I appreciate that the women can also be sexist on the show. That's good. But Harriet or Martha's really trying to make this point that Matt wasn't a star writing for Studio 60 until Harriet showed up.
Yeah.
And he'd been there a couple of years but hadn't made a mark. And is it a coincidence that you and Matt made each other stars? Because he built her up and she built him up. And then she says, I'm not writing a love story. I'm just asking. And I appreciate it. I mean, it's not the first time I've heard it, but I appreciated Harriet's story about her mom when her mom had cancer. And she said, Mom, you never ask God, why me? Why don't you ever say why me? And her mom replied, as Harriet quotes her, I never ask God why me when the good things happen, so I shouldn't ask now. It's pretty good.
Yeah, I liked that. That was effective.
We learned that Harriet's birth name was Hannah. And then at one point, Martha calls her Hannah, which I didn't like. I was like, come on, that's she goes by Harriet now. Stop it. And she wants to know, Martha asks, how are you different from your mother? And Harriet says, I hope in as few ways as possible. And then I thought they overdid it on the crab jokes, because now we see Tom again in the crab costume, and Harriet needs a pen, but Tom can't help because he's in a crab suit. But we've been told again and again how great a reporter Harriet is, and now all of a sudden she's flailing.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I don't have a pen. And like, what does she have to write down? If it's the thing about the mom, like, I got that. I got it down. Like, what are we... If she says she doesn't need a pen, and then suddenly now she does need a pen, she should have a pen. That's all I'm saying. What I wrote was, if Martha's such a good reporter, carry a damn pen.
Now, maybe she's just so flustered by
Sting's handsomeness
that she dropped her pen. I like that Sting knew Cal by name. I think he maybe even called him Calvin or something.
He did indeed.
That something about that made me happy.
I like that. I like that they would show that history and rapport. And like, what I was really thinking was, this was a long scene, and they used Sting as a set piece a little bit. But this was a chance to get Harriet talking a lot about herself, and Sorkin loves talking, and he found ways to make it interesting. But like you're saying before, like, I don't know that I need it. Like, I don't know that I feel like, oh, now I know more about Harriet. The only thing that I find intriguing is that data point we didn't have, that Matt and Harriet made each other better. It's almost like they could have a love story. I don't know.
Imagine. Do we make each other better, Lex? Oh,
I mean, I don't think that I can improve upon your greatness, but yes, you certainly help me. Our next scene is Jack and Jordan getting pitched by a pompous British man.
Ooh, yeah. Search and destroy. That's what they call it, right?
And destroy. That sounds right. Because you're looking for love, but then we're also trying to destroy you by having private investigators.
Mm-hmm. And also, like, having the whole thing happen, be shot and edited and ready for air in 24 hours. This sounds like a terrible show, Lex. I don't think they should do it.
Yeah, well, neither does Jordan. Mm. And Jack is yelling at her because she didn't suck up enough to the guy. I think he says, you didn't love him up enough.
Ugh.
But she doesn't care because she's passing. I like Jordan in this scene because she's very matter of fact. She's not dramatic about it. And she does a British impression of the guy, which I really enjoyed.
Yeah. I mean, it was maybe a little on the nose. People like dredging up stuff out of their past to tear these people down, where the entire thing, the exact same thing happened to Jordan. What? One episode, two episodes ago? Like, it was still very much in recent history. Okay, like, I don't know that we needed it to be quite so on the nose, but still effective. I don't blame her for passing on it, but I also want her to pass on it because it's a terrible idea, not because she's like emotionally invested in how it makes her feel. Like,
and I really do feel like she's passing on it because it's not a good show.
Yeah, she talks about that later.
Yeah,
like this is not the network she's trying to make.
And so then, you know, she's like, well, you haven't read my contract, because we get to fight about this in front of Ed Asner. And he's like, okay, let's fight about it in front of Ed Asner. So they schedule that. Then we go back to watching them rehearse sketches, and we get Lauren Graham, who nobody ever mentions. Hey, by the way, Lauren Graham's hosting this week, but she's just there. And I think I like that. It's like, hey, the feel is there's always some new star here each week. Mm-hmm. And Lauren Graham gets very little to do in episode of the show that we're watching. She's equivalent of Adam Sandler from that show. We don't know who that person is, but I don't know. It just feels so weird that every reference they make is to SNL. Like, these guys are really on the JV squad of late night comedy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then before we get to watch them debate what sketches to cut, we meet that friend, Suzanne. I never got her name until today. Now I finally remember it. But Suzanne goofed.
Mm-hmm.
Suzanne told Martha, so many names in the show. Suzanne told Martha the story of the boot of the Not Pussycat Dolls band and the boot. And Tom says, Suzanne, I'm going to take care of it. And you still don't see any Maggie from Newsroom in Suzanne. But I feel like they are
even less now. Yeah. I don't see it.
Interesting.
When you said Maggie, I even had to like try to remember, who are you talking about? But yeah, you're of course talking about from the Newsroom. No, I don't see it.
Okay. Competent but lacking confidence is mm-hmm. what I'm comparing. So they're debating what sketches to cut. And
when they're debating, they're throwing darts at the board, right? So does that show a lack of confidence in which ones they should really cut? Or they do debate like, well, we got to keep this one because, of course, it's the funniest. We got to keep the baby one because it's got the star in it. And there's also a little of like, I don't know, we need to find, what, 12 minutes or something that they need to cut out of it?
Yeah. And I now I'm thinking how foolish this was, but I read it as, wow, Matt's really good at throwing darts. He knows what sketches he wants to cut, so he's throwing the darts at them. But that's obviously not what throwing darts as a visual analogy is about. So you're right. Like, picking at random seems crazy to me. You know which ones worked mm-hmm. and which ones didn't. Mm-hmm. We get a fun moment here where we also find out how Tom is going to be covering for Suzanne, which is he goes mm-hmm. into Martha mm-hmm. and is like, I'm the one who told you that story, not her. So just get credit it to me because she'll get in trouble and I won't. And then he's talking to Sim about it. And Sim's like, I can handle these people. And then they have a whole conversation about all the stories that they can't talk to the reporter about while Sim is wearing a microphone. And apparently all the actors' microphones are pumped through the headphones that she's wearing at all times. Like,
right.
Beggars belief.
It does. Did you see it coming? Like, did you assume that she could hear it?
No. I feel bad that I didn't, but I didn't. Did you?
Yeah, I wrote down. I'm like, Sim's mic'd up right now, and sure enough, yeah, that was the problem.
Interesting. I would assume that they cut your microphone from those headphones as soon as you're not rehearsing a scene, because that's what they do when you're on stage, right? You exit the stage, they cut your mic because they don't want to hear you pee.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. A lot of people leave the stage to go pee. Makes sense.
I do.
But you can turn it off yourself, but it's also often like taped to your back or something, you know, like it's not easy.
I think often you are not supposed to turn it off yourself. I think you're not supposed to turn it off yourself. I think that's like in his world, that's a union job. Like he's not supposed mm-hmm. to mess with the mics. And then we get to meet Ed Asner, the big boss.
Wilson White.
Wilson White. Good for you.
An alliterative name.
Shocking.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And he said, before I knew it was going to be the thing, like she makes this impassioned argument as to why they shouldn't have it. Well, at first she says, it's a bad show. She wouldn't do it. And he's like, you need to do better. And she's like, well, mm-hmm. it's a show that's bad and it'll make us be bad and we don't want to be bad. And he's like, well, I'm really moved. Mm-hmm. And he's like, he says to Jack, if you want her to cook the meal, you got to let her shop for the groceries. And I'm like, what the hell kind of a weird line is that?
Yeah.
And then I wrote down, I don't love this guy, even though she won.
I wrote, I don't appreciate how gendered that was, but I like that he trusts her.
And then you get Jack explaining, well, that's a quote from Bill Parcells, a football coach who hasn't won a playoff game in 9 years. And I thought, well, that's funny that he knew what the quote was and that, you know, our coach here making this reference is making mm-hmm. a bad reference because that guy, not good.
I looked it up. Bill Parcells still won 2 Super Bowls. Like, arguably a legendary coach. So, I don't know.
I would say inarguably a legendary coach. I'm not a fan of his, but still, good coach. We get to see some bits and pieces of tonight's Studio 60 again. We get to see that Nicolas Cage that you referenced earlier. And I told you in our trailer episode, I love his Nick Cage. He does a great job with it. They throw that guy into every scenario they can.
Yeah, it was great. He was not a very good relationship coach.
No.
But
a very good Nick Cage.
I think that's part of the joke.
We see a little bit of their fake weekend update. And this is also when Sim starts to tell Harry, hey, by the way, we totally screwed up, which seems mm-hmm. like a weird time.
Not the best.
We get a moment of Danny saying, hey, I don't see Jordan McDear. Has she fallen out of love with us? And I was like, boy, you love Jordan McDear, Danny.
Yeah,
You got Jordan McDear, darn.
He's swooning.
And then, of course, it became a plot point, I guess. But I really enjoyed that Matt was watching the show with his bat in hand, with Harriet's bat in hand.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I thought that was quite funny. And it reminded me a lot of Toby having a crutch of his bouncy ball. Yep. On the West Wing, and I wondered, like, what is Aaron Sorkin's toy? I have desk tchotchkes and a couple desk mm-hmm. toys, but nothing so big as a bat.
And nothing that you would consider, like, the Toby ball or the Matt bat. There's nothing that's the Lex thing that you're holding on to all the time.
No. I mean, the closest I get is my non-PopSocket PopSocket on my phone is a thing that I will sometimes use while I'm thinking. It's an O-snap socket. But what about you? Do you have a lovey?
Do I have a lovey? I have things I fiddle with at my desk. Absolutely. The thing I like carry around the most is, would be like my coffee cup. I do wonder if I kind of come across as Lundberg from The Office. Because he's always got his coffee cup when he's migrating from to cubicle to cubicle and stuff. But like that's the thing that like if I'm walking away from my desk, I'm like, oh, can't leave that behind. I need that.
I try never to travel with mine. So that's interesting. And then, I mean, Mac gets a great line because he says the reason he has to give her the $100 because he bet her that he couldn't get her to talk, get him to talk about Harriet. The reason he got better when Harriet came on the show was because he wanted to impress Harriet. That's pretty mm-hmm. good. That's pretty sweet.
Mm-hmm.
Tell Harriet that.
I felt good. I know.
And then we get Jordan meeting with Trevor.
Yeah.
And Trevor's like, no, I'm going to go with HBO because you guys suck. And then Danny comes in and whispers to Trevor. And Trevor's like, okay, I'll do it with you. Now, do I think we're taking some shortcuts with how this works? Yes. But do I appreciate yes. that Trevor's ready to do what Danny says because Danny tells him, hey, she passed on that crappy British guy show? Okay. Mm-hmm. Like I like the plotting of it. I don't like the believability of it. It doesn't pass the sniff test for me as a thing that could happen, but I liked the story it was telling.
It was weird, though, right? Like Danny could have had that conversation out in the open. He could have, like, advocated for the network in front of Jordan. Why did he have to kind of whisper it into his ear as if he was like saying like, if you don't do it, I will murder your family. You know, I don't know. Like that felt a little,
that's a great point. It's mostly because it's more cinematic or fun storytelling yeah. this way. It's to keep a mystery from us for a minute. But yeah, it's a great point. It doesn't make any sense. Hey, do you know that Jordan just passed on? Like, yeah, he could have done it right there.
Do you remember what his show is about? Trevor's show that he wrote?
No. I think I didn't even pay attention as it happened.
Trevor is writing a show about the United Nations. And it's, what does she say? It comes up very briefly in the beginning of the episode. It's called Nations, and it's energetic, it's tense, it's emotional. And I'm like, Jordan is describing Aaron Sorkin writing a show about the West Wing.
Yes, for sure.
Like, and this came up in season one of our show here, Sorkin in It, where I knew that there was some plot line somewhere where Sorkin had written about somebody writing a show about the United Nations.
Wow.
But I couldn't remember what it was from. So
now you know.
Here we are. You know, 35 episodes later, I remembered.
As is often the case when I watch Saturday Night Live, I don't care much about the musical act, even when it's Sting. Like mm-hmm. we had two indulgent moments of staying in this episode.
Bless you.
You can feel free to keep the sneeze in. It's up to you. But we already had one moment kind of underscored by Sting, and now we have a second one. Mm-hmm. I don't buy Harriet at all chilling out mid-show where she's just like hanging out with Matt.
You were in the wrong place.
Having a sweet moment too while she's in concert for her next thing, and mm-hmm. they tell each other about their upcoming dates, basically. And I'm trying to see if I'm going to sneeze again. She tells him he knocks her socks off, and I wrote, I don't know. Like, I don't know about this moment. It feels like that moment happened at the wrong time in this episode.
Yeah. Is Sarah Paulson playing Harriet as just a little awkward? Like, you knock my socks off. Maybe she's written awkward too. It comes across as like this isn't something people say to each other when they're, now this is a kind of a strange relationship, I suppose, where they're kind of in orbit, but not trying to admit it to each other quite yet. I have a hard time imagining like Maggie telling Jim, you knock my socks off or something. She is unusually a little bit awkward, and I find it a little charming, but I also find it kind of tough to swallow sometimes.
This is interesting. I don't know. I think I don't see it as awkwardness. I'm thinking about what you said, though. I'm not just disagreeing with you. I loathe you. No, you knock my socks off, Brian. But so I.
Oh, thanks.
I think that she is unusual. I think that she showed, I mean, I thought that she was surprisingly, impressively magnanimous and big star level chill when it's late at night. First, I couldn't believe how late they were making Sting do his sound check because it was after they had cut all the actors. That doesn't seem like that'd be real. But like, she's being interviewed by that woman much earlier in the episode when it's late and she's been sent home for the day and she doesn't have to be talking to her, and she continues to talk to her. And I thought, wow, she's really, and she was very friendly with her and like really giving her a lot of answers. And I was surprised. So awkward isn't the vibe I get, but like, I think that she is Aaron Sorkin's best attempt at like sophisticated and smart. Just folks, like she's not just like Midwest religious in a way that Aaron Sorkin struggles to understand, whatever else. She's like also cool and sassy, so her weird expression of "you knock my socks off" to me is his trying to combine those things. Like, look, she's still like Jenny from the Block. She, you know, she's still her younger, I was gonna say awkward there, so I'll give you some awkward, her younger awkward self. But like, yeah, She's different.
Yeah. The more you talk about them, I absolutely agree. She comes across as extremely competent and very funny. But she has a lot of that kind of way she kind of grew up still in it. It reminds me of someone like Ainsley Hayes, you know, where I wouldn't consider Ainsley Hayes awkward either, but she has a vulnerability to her that maybe other strong women in other shows that we've seen from Sorkin don't. And so there's that vulnerability makes her even more likable to me. Also, that line totally worked on Matt too. Like, you could see it in his eyes. Like, he was kind of destroyed by that in kind of a good way that was maybe tough for him to admit too.
I agree with you. And it seems inevitable they're going to get together again.
Yeah,
I currently am not rooting for them in the way that the show wants me to, just because I think it's inappropriate for them to be dating in their current situation. Like, it's only going to make everything bad. I'm shipping
Jordan and Danny, though.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. I got no beef with that. I'm also shipping me and Jordan, but Jordan's a fictional character and she existed on a show many years
ago. Yeah, you talked about her kissing you a couple episodes ago. I'm not sure it's going to work out with you, too.
Listen, I also want to write on SNL, and that hasn't been happening either. So the show has a lot of missed connections for me.
Missed collections.
Like we said at the top, is not the best ep, but it was still good. Like, I had a lot of moments I enjoyed.
Yeah.
But a lot of times I watch this and I'm like, man, I can't wait to watch the next one. And here I was like, listen, I'm still looking forward to the next one, but I wasn't like, oh, I got to go see what happens right now. So, oh well. They can't all be A pluses.
There's something kind of weird about Sting, like as a human being. And was he like in this was his loot phase? And I think they kind of like joked about it a little bit. I'm fine with the joke. A lot of big Sting fans there too. But there was kind of like, yeah, he's doing a thing with loots now. I don't know.
You can't have a star on a show and not have the other people on the show be fans of that star. Mm-hmm. So like, of course they're all Sting fans because Sting's there. The same way that they're all giant Yo-Yo Ma fans at the White House on the West Wing because Yo-Yo Ma's there.
It's true.
And I'm not saying I got anything against Yo-Yo Ma, but I have never seen that many people who are not assembled to see Yo-Yo Ma be excited about the existence of Yo-Yo Ma.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I think that Sting played up his own weirdness, and yes, they leaned into his weirdness.
I'm fine with it though. I think it's great.
Oh, please come on our late night show and play the lute.
Or I will come on your late night show as long as I can bring my lute.
Yeah. Yeah. But I don't know, it was a fun ep, even though it wasn't the best one. And I don't know. I gotta say, no matter what, I appreciated that I got to watch it knowing I could talk about it with you.
Oh, the feelings of Brian,
with all of our listeners.
Yeah.
Do you have any advice for these listeners? Anything we want to encourage them to do?
Yes. Listeners, if you could, please rate and review the show. You could also head on over to The Incomparable. If you're not a member yet, please consider joining, becoming a member. You get lots of bonus content, even a bonus episode for this show, but plenty of other good bonus stuff too. And you also get access to the member Discord and a few other perks along the way. You can also choose to allocate some of your dollars as a member to any one of your favorite shows on the network. Lastly, I suppose there's one other thing you could do, but I feel like you should tell them what to do, Lex.
I don't like to tell people what to do, Brian.
What they could do.
Okay. Well, it's just this. You must keep Sorkin. It's important. We need you to
do that. Good plan.
Don't let us down.